know I'm free. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the
God bless the USA, and that's because we are finally waking up to the climate crisis thanks to that epic climate rally in Washington, D.C. a week ago Sunday. That's going to be our focus for the first half hour. Hi, I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and I'm very pleased to have with me in just a moment Sarah Hodgden. She's the National Programs Director for the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club and 350.org, among the organizations organizing that fabulous turnout, amazing rally, so inspiring. We're going to play a short video, at least a bit of it, to give you some idea if you were not there what went down and what's come up since then and where the movement will go now that there is momentum. It's great to be back with you after taking a two-week hiatus. I'm working on my book, and it's really nice to be back, though, live. Hope you enjoyed the Best of Betsy shows that we played there at PRN. And Sarah, want to say welcome to the Green Front and find out all about your excursion to the nation's capital.
Hi, Betsy. I'm glad to be here and talking with you about this fantastic rally. I was there the whole week before getting ready with folks coming in from 30 states on 150 buses and just being there that day with 50,000 people on the mall. It was an extraordinary experience.
It looked like it. I wish I could have been there with you, but a lot of us were there in spirit, a lot of people holding rallies in their own towns, including here in San Francisco. I heard anywhere, you know, from 35,000 to 50,000, so even if it was 40-something, you know, that is an amazing turnout by tens of thousands, you know, bigger than anything we've seen before. Let's take a moment just to hear what Bill McKibben and Van Jones, among many, were there to talk about and how they got the crowd fired up.
All I ever wanted to see was a movement of people to stop climate change, and now I've seen it. You are the antibodies kicking in as the planet tries to fight its fever. It is our job to make sure the planet does not catastrophically overheat. Today, at the biggest climate rally by far in U.S. history, the most fateful battle in human history is together.
This is the last minute in the last quarter of the biggest, most important game humanity has ever played. President Obama, all the good that you have done, all the good you can imagine doing, will be wiped out by floods, by fires, by superstorms, if you fail to act now to deal with this crisis that is a gun pointed at the head of the future.
A gun pointed to the head of the future. Wow, you can't help but get goosebumps, Sarah, listening to that. What was it like to be there?
It was just incredible to be there. I had the opportunity to stand up on stage and look out over the crowd and just to see people from all over the country, every age, every race, carrying signs about issues that they cared about with climate change, fracking, coal plants, the Keystone XL pipeline. It was an amazing experience because people are so hungry to be able to turn their concern about climate change into action.
And how far did people come from? And hopefully in some, you know, low-carbon ways, I'm sure, given the sensitivity of this crowd, whenever
we
possible.
We had people coming from as far away as Nebraska and Iowa. There were folks that came in on the train from Minnesota, and they had musicians coming in with them from Prairie Home Companion. And we know that on all these buses, people were doing trainings about what they were going to do when they got back home to their communities.
And what kinds of things did you hear about? Because that's really what has to happen next now that there genuinely feels like there is new momentum, finally.
Yes, you know, the momentum is really exciting. And I hope that the White House heard the calls of all those people that were out there. We know that one of the first and most important things that the president can do is reject the Keystone XL pipeline. And there were a lot of people there that were really concerned about that issue, saying that the president can't be talking about climate, what he's going to do on climate, and then approve this pipeline. There were
exactly.
Also people...
also I was just going to say, you know, also with John Kerry now in a position to really be influential.
Yes, absolutely. And I know that he is studying this issue and looking into it, and I know that it had to make a difference to him as he's getting started as Secretary of State, that all these people were out there really calling on him and the president to take action for the climate.
And there's just a report out today showing that there was one Republican senator who's saying that there's a 50-50 chance that, you know, President Obama will, you know, not pass it. And he's saying that the environmental movement is really being heard on that. I'll get his name up. Pull up the story here, but the environmental movement is being heard. That is pretty nice to hear that, you know, finally, even if President Obama was not physically in the White House on February 17th.
That's right. No, we've heard from staff at the White House that they were aware of the rally. They know that we were in town. They met with some of the delegations that we brought in, the refinery, folks that live in refinery communities, coal plant, coal mining communities, folks that live up in Canada, the First Nations, where they're experiencing the tar sands extraction. And in all of these meetings, we were hearing from agencies that they knew we were in town and that it's making a difference.
I know there was some, you know, mock controversy, you know, in the media about how whether President Obama should have been seen playing golf with Tiger Woods and whether the press was invited or uninvited. They're going
right.
on and on. I said, no, the only real important question here is why wasn't President Obama in the White House that day? But in a way, it really doesn't matter because it finally did get picked up by national media and the rest of the country heard it. I'm sure President Obama, you know, saw it, heard it, got a report. You cannot ignore tens of thousands of people outside your front door.
That's right. I mean, at the Sierra Club, we work to re-elect President Obama, and we know that he cares about climate change. He spoke about it very powerfully in his inaugural address. He touched on it in the State of the Union. And we believe that he cares about these issues. We also know that he won't take action unless there are people demanding it and really creating that space for him to move forward even further than people think is possible. And that's why this rally made such a big difference.
And you can tell that the tar interests, the oil interests, fossil fuel industry, they're getting nervous because they're really, you know, waging and ramping up their, you know, attacks and saying that this is jobs, jobs, jobs. How many jobs do you think are really going to be created if the pipeline does go through? You know, I've heard everything from 25,000 to 250,000, but I've heard it's more like 2,500, some of them temporary. It's all over
the
place.
I'm not an expert in that. I don't know the number of jobs that would be created, but what I do know is that I had the opportunity while I was in D.C. to meet with some solar executives, some of them that came into town, and I know that there are more jobs right now that are coming online from solar and wind and, you know, retrofitting our homes, energy efficiency. I think that's what we really need to be focused on right now.
And to those who say that, you know, this oil is going to go somewhere, if it doesn't, you know, go through the United States, it'll be shipped off to China, what is the Sierra Club's position on that angle?
There's three ways to get the tar sands oil out of Canada. It can go to the east or the west or to the south, and we know that our allies up in Canada are fighting the routes to the east and the west, and they're having great success, and so we're really focused on the south. We don't think they're going to be able to get that tar sands oil out of Canada. And this is really a time for us as a country to be thinking about how do we move off of oil and how do we start moving on to a more sustainable economy.
And what is it about extracting oil or tar from sands that is so energy intensive, expensive, and not without emissions?
We just know that this is a really dirty and dangerous industry. I mean, when you see the pictures of what's happening up in Alberta and what the landscape looks like, it is just devastating. And there are people that are living right there and are getting sick. And we know that the communities that live along the pipeline route, it's not if there will be spills, it's when there are spills. And that affects the health of communities. It's time for us to move off of this fuel.
And there has been a lot of, you know, publicity about the concern, the controversy over whether there's a leak or not. But as Daryl Hannah said eloquently in one of the interviews around her being arrested at the protest, you know, really the bigger issue is, as James Hansen said, how this will be game over for the climate if this pipeline
right.
is built.
Right. We need to keep fossil fuels underground right now. We can't be mining any more coal. We can't bring the tar sand fuel out. We need to keep, not drill oil off the coast of Alaska. Now is not the time to put more fossil fuels into the air as carbon. Now is the time to bring on a new economy that would create jobs.
And what do you say to those who say, well, you know, it's all well and good to make a transition to renewable energy, but it's not going to happen overnight, and this is a good transition opportunity?
I think it's true that it's not going to happen overnight, but what I would disagree with them about is that it is already happening. We're seeing more energy. In fact, the only energy that came onto the grid in the U.S. in the first 2 months of this year was clean, renewable energy. So the transition to clean energy is already happening. It's here now, and we can be making these moves in community after community across the country right now.
And what do you say to the right-wing media who mocked, you know, the rally in frigid temperatures, saying, oh, and they're concerned about global warming?
It's not just about warming. It's about extreme weather patterns. It's about the crazy storms that we're seeing, Superstorm Sandy. I have a cousin who lives up in Long Island, and she's still, her home is still not recovered from the storm. So it's about the droughts, the wildfires. It's not just about whether or not we have snowstorms, but about all of these erratic weather patterns right now.
Indeed, and there's, you know, snowstorms. We keep hearing about, historic, epic, record, whether it's the continuing drought, even with all the snow in the midsection of the country, to, you know, what has happened with flooding and all kinds of just rising sea levels, and so much evidence of that. Do you think the fact that Superstorm Sandy hit the power, financial, and media center of the country really was part of the wake-up call that we're seeing?
I do. I think that people really, the fact that Superstorm Sandy hit right there in the Northeast, it did make a difference. It caught people's attention. And there are so many stories of people and communities that are still suffering. I think that is making decision makers stop and take notice and really think about how expensive it's going to be if we have to keep the recovery efforts from big storms like this continuing without taking action.
I understand there's another rally planned for Earth Day in the Capitol.
Actually, what we're going to be doing for Earth Day is working across the country and communities to plan climate conversations. So in his first press statement after being reelected, the president said that he wanted to have a conversation with the American public about climate change. And so we're going to take him up on that and have conversations across the country, some in people's homes, some as big as 1,000 people coming together to talk about what this issue means to them where they are locally.
And how important is, you know, education? You know, do Americans really understand, you know, how climate change is happening, what's at stake? I mean, there's a sense that something is wrong with our climate, with our weather. There's a sense that, gee, maybe people should tune in and pay attention. But how deep do you think the real understanding and knowledge goes on the part of average American citizens, and what's needed to change that?
Right. I think that climate skeptics would want us to believe that people are still questioning whether climate disruption is real. But people see what's happening across the country, and they know that it's real. And we see this in polls that are 60%, 70%, 80% people wanting to take action on climate change. So I think that conversation about whether or not it is real, that's behind us. I think the American people understand that these droughts and wildfires and superstorms are a big problem and caused by climate change, and we're seeing them demanding action from decision makers.
I did find that story that I referenced earlier. It was actually a Republican congressman, Representative Lee Terry, who said because of the influence of environmental groups, he believes the Obama administration will likely reject the Keystone Pipeline. That's pretty dramatic to hear that from a Republican congressman. Yeah.
Yes.
He said some think it's a 50-50 proposition, but the environmental movement has made it their number one issue and has put the White House in a predicament. I just don't think the administration will approve it. That's a quote. It came in on Platts Energy a couple of hours ago, if you want to reference that. Platts.com, P-L-A-T-T-S.com. Guess it's a website I had not heard about before. But they cover energy issues. So, yeah, kudos. Congratulations. Mazel tov.
Thank you. You know, I've been an organizer for 20 years, and one of the most exciting things is when people take action and see that they can make a real difference in their community. And I think there are so many people, especially I met so many young people who came out to this rally, who are going to have a very powerful experience for having been there and seeing the country start to take this issue seriously and start to put some solutions in place.
That's exactly right. We really need to see some momentum for people to feel like there is something that can be done. It's not hopeless. And, you know, how did we end up going from problem, what problem, to, oh, it's too late anyway.
Right.
And now might be a good time to, you know, stop in the middle and say, okay, if we, you know, we humans cause this problem somewhat in the dark. We're not in the dark any longer. Only we can get ourselves out of this, and we best start digging out before
That's
we pass
right.
it on to the next generation.
Exactly. And, you know, the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign and our allies have been working across the country. There are now 50,000 megawatts that are slated for retirement of coal plants across the country. And so I think that the people are really seeing that they can make a difference in a way that will matter a lot in what happens in the next several decades with the climate.
And if listeners want to know how they can make a difference going forward, what are some things they can do besides join Sierra Club if they're not members, or 350.org, you know, get press releases from you guys? There are literally every environmental group is working on climate as a number one priority.
Yeah.
But how do we sort of get all the groups to work together? You know, sometimes it can get kind of siloed, like I guess any other industry, where everybody's kind of got their turf and their membership and their messages. But it seems like this is a really good time to come together and really exploit, if you will, the people power that's growing.
Right. We saw unprecedented collaboration on this rally. We had 170 groups that came together to sponsor the rally, and that meant groups from across the country that were recruiting their members, helping them to get to D.C., and talking with them about why climate matters to them and their organization. And so a few things that folks can do. You can go to standwiththeplanet.com. It's one of the places where we're putting up information about all of the work that we're doing. We have a calendar there of events that people can join all across the country. And in particular, I would ask people to come out to our climate conversations that are going to be happening in March and April and really join with us, talk about why you care about climate change, the impact you've seen in your community, and get together with other people that live right there and come up with a plan for doing something right at home.
And my area of focus for the last 15 years has been getting more mainstream media, not only coverage, but actually dedicated programs to cover the myriad environmental issues that are growing rapidly. How important do you think that would be to really get mainstream media to start dedicating some programming time?
I think that would be huge. I think the mainstream media has an important responsibility in telling the story of what's happening with climate change honestly and accurately. We were amazed by the number of reporters that came out to the rally, and that we were really happy with the stories that came out after that. But reporters are going to have to continue telling that story, because this isn't just a one-time thing. This is a very real problem with results and impacts that we're seeing every day.
Absolutely, and I did see your executive director, Michael Baroon, quoted extensively in what coverage there was. A little disappointed to see you know, like many of the networks like NBC, CBS did voiceover where they, you know, showed the background tape of people, massive numbers of people for sure, you know, rallying, and then they would just read over, you know, what we call voiceover, 20, 25 seconds. But some did more. CNN did a little bit more. And, you know, some of the cable networks like MSNBC did more.
Right.
They did all cover it, except ABC Network News, I don't think, did anything that day. They might have done something subsequently. But, you know, even though it was more than they usually do, and we get excited about that, we watched for that, it's still, given the importance of the subject area, given the incredible size of the rally, given the momentum, it really should have at least been a reporter package, you know. But,
right.
you know, I guess a little bit of progress we have to applaud.
That's right. There was progress, but I do think this is a responsibility for mainstream media to really take on this story and do it well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I couldn't agree more with that. And, you know, there's efforts to do that, and hopefully they'll start, like CNN used to have an environmental reporter. They used to have, you know, Ted Turner, after all, started CNN, and he gets the energy crisis. So
that's right.
In addition to just having, you know, reports, there needs to be dedicated programming, you know, to cover all this. Those of us who have covered the beat for years know how interesting it is, how dynamic it is, how many challenges we have, and how many solutions are out there. And last but not least, how many, you know, knowledgeable, passionate, interesting experts, you know, across the green spectrum are available to tell us what we need to know, and quickly.
That's right. I totally agree. And I appreciate those of you who have been out there telling this story for 20, 30 years, because this has been something that people have been working on for a long time. It's only now starting to get attention, but we must act very quickly, and that means that we're going to need a lot of people broadcasting.
Exactly, and maybe those of us who have been, you know, relegated to you know, the liberal network, the late great Air America, where I was for 3 years, or on the internet, which is great, and thank goodness for, you know, progressive networks like PRN and Sierra Club. I know you guys have a show, but it's somewhat self-selecting. In other words, progressive, green-minded people, you know, seek out these kind of programs. We really need to be, you know, on a mainstream platform where people can just come across it. So hopefully we'll be a 15 or 20-year overnight success story, those of us who have been relegated to green media, if you will.
I hope so.
Media. Yeah, I mean, it's got to go beyond that, and I think that's starting to happen. So, you know, just want to thank you for all the great work you're doing at the Sierra Club. You have a great leader in Michael Brune. It's so good to see him, you know, on Piers Morgan and, you know, really large mainstream outlets being cool, calm, collected, but also, you know, smart and clever and calm. I know he was up against somebody. Was it Mark Merritt? Not Mark, I call him Mark Moronic. there's the guy, Mark Morano.
Was this on, you know, Fox News?
Yeah, Climate Depot, yes. You know, the denial machine that is funded by the Koch brothers et al. And he really kept us cool while you know, making some really, you know, powerful points.
We love having Michael Brune at the helm of Sierra Club, and we just feel so excited about where the organization is right now under his leadership. And, you know, all of the work of our volunteer leaders and activists across the country. It's just a very exciting time for our organization.
Well, Sierra Hodgson, thanks again for joining us, and I really appreciate all that you did and the Sierra Club did and all those who got arrested. Well worth it. I'm sure everybody agrees.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Michael Green about the toxic shell game. You thought BPA was out of products? Well, what if the replacement is just as dangerous? We'll talk about that and what the 411 is on flame retardants in common items like couches and computers right after these messages.